Hello and welcome to the No Name Ever podcast. I'm Jamie Smith, and joining me this week are James, Natalie and Simon Evans, who joins us from America to talk about the 2-0 defeat at Stoke at the weekend. Burnley quite poor again away from home. It's still just a single point on the road, one goal scored and none from open play. So a lot of progress needed there. Team selection though, Natalie, a lot of changes. Four changes made by Dash, including a switch back to 4-4-2. Stephen Defoe left on the bench though. What did you make of the team when you saw it on Saturday afternoon?
I was and wasn't surprised, to be honest. I was not surprised to see the return of the 4-4-2, and I wasn't surprised to see him try and get Andre back in the side. We talked about this at length last week on the podcast, where we felt that he just needed to suck it up and get him back in that side as quickly as possible. We can't have a player of Andre's quality on the bench and just not, you know, mentally capable of playing. So I wasn't surprised by those tactics. I was really surprised by Defoe being left out. And unless he was really, really injured, in which case he shouldn't really have been on the bench, I do not understand that at all. He's the one player in that squad who gives us so much quality and actually gives us an attacking threat, which nobody else does. So I don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah, shout up if I'm wrong, but as far as I'm aware, Dash hasn't said anything about Defoe since the game. So
no, he hasn't.
Presumably not an injury, and it was a tactical decision, presumably. Simon, did a strange one in a way. Burnley started the game quite well, but then it was the same old story with sloppy defending and giving away cheap goals and out of the game by half time.
Yeah, it's just that sinking feeling now, isn't it, with away games? It started to feel depressingly familiar to, has to be said, to previous Premier League campaigns, doesn't it? Away from home, at least. I mean, it's two different sides. I mean, the results obviously show that, but there's something going on here, I think, on a psychological level that needs to be addressed by Dyche and his staff, because, you know, that team that plays at home, yeah, I mean, there's always a difference between playing at home and playing away on so many different levels. It's a very different approach you've got to take, obviously. But there seems such a difference in confidence, you know, to me. That first 10 minutes, yes, we got after them. We made a positive start. But then, you know, a sloppy mistake, and suddenly then it's just like, oh, here we go again. You know, and there's just not that same belief. Whereas at home, we play with swagger like we can beat anyone in the league. You know, it's really got to be something that they look at. And I was quite pleased with the changes he made, really. And although, you know, eyebrows will be raised about Defoe, and I presumed there must have been some sort of injury or something, the fact is the guy's been playing 60 minutes a game. And I was thinking, well, if he plays him, you know, 40 minutes of the game in the second half, does it really make that much of a difference whether he starts or he comes off the bench? And presumably he was trying to get a little bit more energy and robustness to the side, but didn't really work. And, you know, it's back to the drawing board, really. And I think they've got to find something away from home that gives the side some belief. And I think, you know, I'll shut up in a minute, but I think the biggest problem is the lack of a sort of release ball, you know, a threat, a pacey threat on the break. You look at teams who do well away from home, of the smaller teams, and they tend to have somebody who can run with the ball and really turn, get you out of that siege, and we just seem to get locked into it.
Yeah, I think that's probably what Gudmundsson brings to the team, and I think we missed him really badly on Saturday, but there are some options for what we could do out wide. Playing Boyd and Arfield wide in a 4-4-2, the team just looked very, very Championship to me, and that's only with Heaton injured, Gudmundsson injured, and Defoe left out. That's all we were missing, three players missing, and it just looked like a Championship team, and we played like a Championship team. James Dash promised changes, and he made them to the team, but it just didn't make that much of a difference in the end, did it?
No. And, you know, you look at it, and I know people have obviously wanted Lawton to get a game on the bench for a while and Flanagan come in, but Flanagan's maybe not made the most convincing case for himself there, has he? I mean, it reminded me a lot of the way he played at Accrington Stanley, where he sort of looked lost. Mm. And it's really difficult to believe that, you know, a few years ago, he was convincingly holding down a place on the side that looked like they were going to win the league. And then the second goal on Saturday, he's just... as amateur defending, really, for a right back.
It's like he wasn't even there, was he? Arnautović had just gone past him like it was just nobody.
He offers no pressure on him or anything. You know, there's nothing to stop the winger doing what he wants with it. And then to see him get brought off for Tarkowski as well was a bit of a strange one, really. So replacing someone who's having a bad game because he's getting beaten all day with someone who's not really got much pace.
But waiting so I feel like I'm just getting out my old drum and going on about the subs, but it's the second half was an improvement, but I feel like Stoke was still pretty much in control. We didn't really create.
I'd say particularly on the flank where Flanagan was, you know, if you're watching a guy get beaten up all afternoon, at some point you take him off, don't you?
Yeah, that's the only explanation I can think of to put Tarkowski on for Flanagan, that it was to take Flanagan out of the line of fire. But in that case, why wait so long? I don't understand why. It was like 77 minutes, I think, before Sam Vokes came on. The guy's our top scorer this season. All right, he's had a couple of quiet games, but the 77 minutes when Barnes and Gray just accomplished very little between them. It seemed very muddled from Dash for me. The team selection didn't seem to make sense. Tactically, it didn't really make sense. I don't understand what he was hoping to achieve, really.
I actually feel for Greg because, you know, he gets a chance back in the side and he sets up a team that's going to give him absolutely no service. I mean, Ashley Barnes is a player who can make a little bit of his own luck and, you know, bring himself a few chances with his work rate. You know, Vokes, if you just get maybe one or two decent crosses in, he's got a chance of getting his head on it. But Gray, really, you need to actually feed him and, you know, you play to his strengths. And we didn't do that at all. I think Arfield and Boyle that wide, well, are we trying to have any width or not? Because both of them are just like, there's a magnet in the centre of the pitch that just draws the both of them in. And they become completely ineffectual. And it's like we've got a four-man box midfield.
They always play like that, but it was particularly noticeable on Saturday. It seemed at times when it was almost Boyd and Arfield playing in front of Marnie and Hendrick and a 2-2 rather than a 4.
It looked deliberate on Saturday, though, didn't it?
It did.
I was watching that and thinking they've been told this time to play like this. It's not a case of George wandering in from the flanks. It looked like, let's play narrow today. You know, let's keep it really tight and compact.
There's been so many games this season.
But then we conceded two goals from crosses, so defending narrow didn't really work.
Yeah.
The thing is as well, there's been so many games this season where we've just been crying out for a little bit of whip and to, you know, maybe try and suck a fullback out and make a bit of space in behind him or anything, just try something a bit different and we don't do it. And I think a big part of the problem on Saturday as well was Jeff Hendrick, really, because I'm not sure that he's really settled in yet and I don't know if he knew where he was really meant to be playing. Last time we spoke about him, obviously, we were saying he seemed to be stuck halfway between the midfield and the striker. Well, he wasn't really that excuse this time, was he? He was in a midfield four, so it should have been more comfortable for him. But I just thought he gave a completely unconvincing performance.
I've defended Hendrick for those reasons. I think the price tag, it's maybe unfair to judge him by that. And I don't think the role we've been playing him in has suited him. But in a flat four, in a two-man central midfield, he offered absolutely nothing on Saturday. And when he was in the team for Defoe, who is our best player for me, it was startling how little Hendrick contributed. And he was probably one of two players who was lucky not to be sent off because he hauled someone down after he'd already been booked. I don't understand why he wasn't sent off.
As you alluded to before, Defoe must be sort of carrying a little bit of a knock or something, because when he's out of the side, we like that person who's got a magic pass on him.
Yeah, and you were spot on about Gray as well. You put Gray in, you need someone who's going to thread the ball through for him. DeForce, the one player in the squad who has that really in his locker, and to put Gray in and then take out the service, it just seemed really confused from Dash for me. Natalie Barnes came in, though. How did you feel he did? I think he was probably also lucky not to be sent off for the elbow on Martin Zindi that broke the defender's face. He's got a fractured cheekbone.
Definitely. I mean, you don't like to sort of call your players out, do you? And you want to keep some of these things quiet. You don't want them to get reputations. But he was very, very lucky. I was quite shocked when I saw it. I'd seen obviously the reports coming through social media that there'd been an incident. When we saw it on the replays as well, it was just like that. So he's very, very, very lucky he stayed on the pitch.
It's tricky, isn't it, though, Barnes? Because you don't want to take that aggressive edge out of his game, but sometimes he just goes too far and crosses he that does. Line because he's so desperate to make an impression.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I was just about to make, Jamie. You're completely right. You don't want to defuse Barnes because the energy he brings and the fight that he brings and the desire that he brings is classic Barnes, and we love him for that. And sometimes he lifts the players, and sometimes he brings that fight that, you know, especially away from home as well, with a set of players who are very jaded and are obviously, as Simon said earlier, suffering from some psychological problems away from home. Barnes hasn't got that because he's largely not been included in those teams. So he has got a fresh head. He has got a fresh attitude. And he's the one player who can, you know, rejuvenate that side. But he does go too far. I don't know whether he's just massively clumsy or whether there is a bit of a nasty streak in him. It's a really difficult one to call. And I think he's borderline on both ways. But other than that, you know, he looked really good. You know, he just brings a different style of play to the game. As much as we love him, I'm not entirely convinced that he has got a good enough technical ability to make that much of a difference in the Premier League. I don't think he's a good technical footballer, but it's something different. And you know what? Dacia said this sometimes. When you're a side like Burnley and you are struggling to attract certain players who don't want to come to an unfashionable club, when you're struggling in a transfer market because you're being muscled out in terms of finance, you've got to find different ways to beat the teams in this division. And players like Ashley do offer something different that other sides don't have. So, you know, it was classic Barnes. He didn't do enough. I think my last point on this is I think whilst Barnes offers something different and he offers a fight to that side, he can't do it by himself. As I said before, he doesn't have the technical ability, but he just can't lift an entire side. He needs to have... His impact is when the rest of the team are doing well. So say, for example, the Palace winner that he scored in the last minute, it was because of a brilliant Gudmundsson pass. You know, he can't do it on his own without the support of the team. So unfortunately, when the rest of the team are gone, their heads are gone and they're struggling to compete in a game, he won't be able to make an impact just by himself. But I think we should carry on with him, at least bring him on as an impact sub.
Yeah, I think... As a sub is the way to use Barnes because he brings that energy and physicality, but it just, again, the muddled thinking. Gray and Volks have been such a good partnership last season, and Gray's not been in the team much this season. Partly his own fault because of suspended, but then he brings him back in and doesn't play him with Volks. I couldn't get my head around what Dash was doing all day on Saturday. When I saw the team, it just looked like a team that was going to get beat, and there's no real surprise that they got beat. It just didn't look anything like up to it. Defensively, Simon, sloppy again at the back. It's just far too easy teams are scoring goals. Two good finishes, but those balls into the box, they've got to get cut out.
Yeah, and that's what I don't understand, because they do at home, don't they? We haven't been making piles of defensive errors at home, really. And, you know, you could still say over the season as a whole, our two central defenders have had very good seasons, haven't they? But then we go away from home under these, you know, I think the Flanagan thing didn't work. And, you know, I mean, really, if you're looking at what happens in January, you know, if Dash is going to be ruthless about it, you know, why are we paying any salary for Flanagan and Bamford on loan? They might as well go back, you know. And I think the right back situation, we've had that solid defensive foundation all last year and for much of this year, especially at home. And the fact there's now a big question mark over right back, I think that might be something he needs to look at as well, unless he really believes that Lawton can bounce back and get back in the team and deliver Premier League quality performances. You know, what's Kieran Trippier up to, by the way? Is he still playing football somewhere?
Apparently so.
I was looking at Trippier the other day, actually. He started three of the Champions League games, so although he's not seen a lot of action in the Premier League, he has been playing Champions League football for Spurs, albeit in a team that hasn't done very well in that competition. So
it's maybe a bit wishful thinking
that we might be able to get him back.
But he's not going to get in the Spurs starting lineup. He's not going to dismiss. I mean, I thought he might do the other. I don't like to wish injury on players, but I saw a couple of games ago Walker looked like he might be in for an injury. But it's as it turns out, he's fine. He's not going to get back in that side.
They rotate the fullbacks quite a lot, though. Spurs.
Sorry, Kieran Trippier was the best thing that ever happened to Kyle Walker. Before that, he was absolutely diabolical.
Yeah, you're right, James.
Just stepped up. Like,
Trippier's quite unlucky then, in that, you know, I think when they bought him off us, I think they fully expected that he was going to break into first team football, and then Walker just developed the form of his absolute life and he's not had a sniff since.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when Trippier was really knocking on the door, wasn't it? They were sort of rotating him, you know, with the cup games and stuff during the week he was playing, and Walker played in the Premier League at the weekend. And a lot of Spurs fans, and I know a few, and they were saying, yeah, you know, Trippier should be starting. I don't know why Pochettino's not doing that. And they were for it. And I think, yeah, that sometimes you do get that situation where the pressure, you know, delivers some performance. I mean, we've got another right back as well, of course, but I mean, he's been completely forgotten.
James is a fan of Dariqua, but
I honestly couldn't remember who you were thinking of.
He didn't always look up to it in the Championship for me, so it's maybe a bit of a stretch.
Defensively, I think he's unfortunately probably not cut out for the Premier League. But I'm one of the very few people who's not been absolutely disgusted by Matt Lawton this season. I think he's been more than serviceable.
No, that's true. But I mean, I've probably, out of the podcast regulars, I've probably been the most critical of Loughton. I'm really, are we Loughton? Are we Loughton? Papa Bird's confused this, Jim.
It is Loughton.
Fine, it is Loughton.
I've been told by Papa Bird, he was told it is Loughton.
It is Loughton, right, good.
By him or not. But
glad we've waited until a year into the lad's career.
Well, they were definitely calling him on player. They were definitely calling him Loughton at the beginning. But anyway, it's very difficult
as well sometimes to avoid not slipping between the two.
Can you imagine? It is. Well, I've definitely been Loughton's most critical harsh critic, sorry, on this podcast. But I have to say, I wouldn't go as far as to say I've been completely disgusted with him. And there have been some games where he has played all right, and I have given him credit where credit's due. Now looking at it, and we've called out for maybe Flanagan to come in and see what he's made of, Loughton is the best right-back option that we have at the club. So unless we're going to spend a lot of money on a replacement, he has to play, and he has to play every single week. And we're going to have to accept that there are going to be some games where he's a bit poor, and sometimes against certain teams in this league, that he's going to get caught for pace, or he's going to get caught out of position. But certainly what was offered on Saturday was just abysmal. I mean, Flanagan was awful. That second goal, my God.
I've wanted that change for weeks.
Me too.
I felt like Flanagan Fulton's been on the cards. I've not understood why Dash has waited so long to do it. But it's hard to defend Flanagan after that. I felt it was harsh that people said don't play him because he's terrible against Stanley. Everyone was terrible against Stanley. It was his first game, and he'd not played football for 18 months, really, so I don't want to judge him off that, but it was awful again on Saturday. So part of me thinks he needs a run in the team. Part of me thinks he's just rubbish. He needs to get Loughton back in. But it's a real problem position for us, and that we ended the game with James Tarkowski continuing his tour of positions that he can't play at right back. It just seems to me that Dash was getting a little bit desperate.
He's turning into a bit of a cult hero, is Tarky, isn't he? I wonder how many positions he's going to play by the end of the season.
He's played defensive midfield, right back, emergency striker. He's played everywhere apart from centre-back.
New Graham Branch.
He's meant to play.
I was gonna say, actually, Graham Branch is a good one. I'm perhaps showing my age here, but he's the new Andy Farrell.
Graham Branch.
Andy Farrell, I think he played in goal as well. He did actually play right back quite a bit. So
let's hope we don't see James Tarkowski in goal, because that would suggest that something's gone quite wrong at some point.
Well,
so.
You say I was going to say after Saturday, Smith, I think I'd rather have Tarky in goal than bloody Robinson. Sorry, apologies for language. This is a family podcast.
The second half, though, there was a bit of an improvement, Simon, in that we posed some threat, seemed to look after the ball a bit better, but we're still just controlling the game from there. You seem to see that in the Premier League. Teams get a couple of goals up and they're just trying to shut the game down.
Not quite. I think I was quite impressed by the second half, I have to say. I thought that was a game where could very easily have become a West Brom or a Leicester and ended up 4 or 5 nil, you know. And I think Dyche was saying to him, go out there and show that, you know, be in the game with 10 minutes to go and let's see if we can't nick one and give him a scare. Which, you know, is not the ideal position to be in. But when you're 2-0 down at half-time, I thought it was a decent performance. It showed that perhaps, but you're right, the edge goes off the opposition. It's hard to judge those performances in that situation. But, you know, again, when we did get into somewhere promising, there was just that lack of finesse really as well, you know, and we looked to DeFore to deliver that. But really you don't, you know, Hendrick's been disappointed in that aspect, hasn't he? And the two wide players are starting to look, and I like them both for different reasons. I think that they've given an awful lot to the club, but there are games away from home where Arfield and Boyd, you know, even though we've got that possession and we're going forward, where they do look championship level, you know, with the quality of delivery into the box and that kind of thing. And we just didn't, the final third, we just didn't really create enough, did we? Even though we had that possession in midfield and Marnie was bossing it a bit more, you know, so.
Yeah, I think he touched the ball 19 times, Boyd, on Saturday. It was 22 times the game before that. It's just not involved nearly enough. I know he offers, he's supposed to offer a defensive protection, although I think he was well off it for the first goal, I think it was on his side. But he just doesn't do anything on the ball, so it's like playing with 10 and we just can't afford to do that. You have to have players who offer something going forward because we're just not creating anything away from home, and it seems obvious to me. I know there's not a lot of alternatives. James likes Kightley. A lot of people think Kightley's not good enough, but he's got to try something different because without Gudmundsson, there's just no threat from wide areas whatsoever at the minute.
We have to buy, I think, you know, without being alarmist, I think it is once again going to be another of those windows where, you know, the club has to decide if it's, you know, how serious it is about staying up, you know, and last time they spent the money, albeit in a sort of end of window sort of rush. But I think, you know, there's clear areas of the team that need to be addressed immediately in January if we're to have a chance of staying up. Something's got to change away from home because I don't think you can stay up just by relying on your home form.
Yeah, I think they tried to buy Grzycki, didn't they, on deadline day, and it was obviously an off-the-field issue apparently got in the way of that deal, but you'd imagine a winger will be one of the main targets.
When we talk about wingers, though, I mean, what annoys me about Dash and Kightley is when he brings him on for like 1 minute at the end of the game where we've already gone to route one. It's like, what are we achieving by bringing on players all of a sudden that are going to play wide when we've already resigned ourselves to, you know, getting it to Keane or me and then lumping it into the box?
I think that's a really good point, Birdie, but I think it highlights for me a slightly wider issue with this in that Dyche, for me, his ability to change tactics through the game and make effective substitutions is perhaps his weakest part of his game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's nothing new, that is it? We've said that on the podcast before, and when you're one of the better teams in the league, you can get away with it because your team's probably better than the opposition, but you really need to be able to change things when it's not going your way, and we don't see that from Dyche enough. This season, okay, he's had one substitution that's paid off very well when he put Barnes on against Palace. A lot of people, myself, James, certainly among them, were wanting Grace to come on. Barnes came on, scored the winner. Fair enough, he's got that one right. But when we go behind, it's game over at the moment, especially away from home. It just doesn't look like we're going to get anything from it. Heads start to drop, which is the most disappointing thing for me. I think Simon's certainly right. There's something psychological, something mental not going right out there. It seems to me there's a lack of leadership. I don't think dropping DeFore helps with that, because even if he's not massively vocal, he leads by example in the middle of the park. And it just felt to me like on Saturday it was throw stuff at the wall, see what sticks. And unfortunately, absolutely nothing stuck. So Saturday at home to Bournemouth, Natalie, I assume we're going to see something different again. The 4-5-1's worked quite well at home, so might be back to that plan. Gray back on the bench, maybe.
Yeah, I expect so. I mean, Dyche is in quite an impossible situation here, really, in that we know how much he likes consistency, you know, how comfortable he is in picking the same players in the same formation, and it certainly worked last season in that, and that's how we were successful as we were. He's in a very uncomfortable position where he's being forced to change on a regular basis to either compensate for players' injuries or suspensions, but also tactics that haven't worked. But then he doesn't want to be doing that too much because he doesn't want to tinker with a size that people then become not disillusioned as such, but basically not that confident in where they're supposed to be playing and what they're supposed to be doing. I certainly think that there will be a change from Saturday's tactics, but I expect that we will revert back to earlier tactics as opposed to something completely new. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the 4-5-1 again with Defoe back in the squad. The problem with that, obviously, is how we deal with Gudmundsson's absence. It's going to be really difficult. I mean, I was watching Bournemouth on Sunday. Did they play? Yes, Sunday. And if Bournemouth play the way they can, they're going to absolutely play us off the park. And it's quite a depressing thing to think about because Bournemouth were a worse side than we were not so very long ago. And all that's happened is that they've spent well. They've spent on the right players. And they have... what's the word I'm looking for? They've consolidated their league position very well and they're turning themselves into an established and very good Premier League side very, very quickly. And it's, you know, we could do that, but at the moment we look like a mile away from being the side that Bournemouth are, and all they've had is one season in the Premier League. So I'm really worried about Saturday, and I think he has to do something. He has to get a grip on midfield. If he doesn't do something to pack that midfield and keep possession, we are not going to see much of the ball, and we're literally going to get passed off the park.
It's a strange one, I think, because the fact Bournemouth are going to dominate the ball doesn't worry me that much. The games where we've had quite a lot of the ball this season, we haven't played well. We had quite a lot of the ball at Stoke, but did nothing with it. West Brom, they did a Burnley on us, played on the break, and battered us. So it might well be a Liverpool-style game where Bournemouth have all the ball, we sit in and then try and hit them on the break. So it'd be an interesting one tactically there. Simon, I think a lot of people expected Dash to play 4-4-2 for most of the season. The switch to 4-5-1 seemed to be designed around the Gray suspension. Is there anything else that Dash could be missing? I've suggested a 4-3-3 with Gray, Barnes and Volks up front might be worth a go, but it's very much a just desperately trying to find a different way of doing it at the minute, because we've tried a few different things and it's not worked in the last few weeks.
There's a thing you could do with Barnes, which he did in the past, which might not necessarily be 4-3-3. But given that, you know, you're looking at Boyd and Arfield and Gudmundsson's injured, and Keitley probably isn't going to be a player who comes in and does the business, you've got that option of playing Barnes out on the wide position, haven't you? You know, and he will track back and work in midfield and scrap and fight and get booked and foul people and then pop up in attack. You know, he'll graft. So he's got the option that he could play 4-4-2. With Barnes as one of the attacking players from wide positions and play Volks and Gray together. How much time have Defoe and Gray spent on the field together?
Hardly any. And you'd say they're two of the players that we would expect to be two of our most important players this season.
And you would think, you know, if Defoe's strength, you hinted at this earlier on, Defoe's strength is the precision of his passing and his vision. Gray cries out for that and needs, when he sets off on those runs, somebody who really can just split a defender with a pass. You know, I think whatever formation he goes with, presuming that people are fit, whatever formation he goes with, I want to see those two playing together. I want to see if Defoe can be the guy who brings out the best in Andre Gray, because we don't know yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think you think about partnerships, don't you? And Gray and Volks is a partnership that worked quite well last season, although it wasn't the same sort of partnership as Ings and Volks in that there wasn't a lot of interplay. It was more that they gave the defenders different things to think about, and that's what worked for the team. But that's the partnership. Defoe and Gray strikes me as a partnership that would work well in theory, but yeah, we've not seen it yet. Your fullback and wingers obviously need to be good partnerships. We've not really seen that yet, so I think that's something that we really need to see on Saturday. James, what do you think Dash is going to do? The 4-4-2 worked so well last season, but we've just not got results with it this season. 4-5-1 has been what's worked at home, but then what do you do with Andre Gray?
It's difficult. I mean, we've seen it a bit on you know, Twitter, some people have been talking about selling him and saying that, you know, he doesn't fit, he's not good enough for the Premier League. I think that's, you know, ridiculous. He's clearly our best goal scorer. You know,
I saw someone actually on that point saying sell Gray and buy a proven Premier League goal scorer, as if there's just loads of them who were firstly available and secondly anywhere near what we would be able to afford. Like, it's, you can't just do that.
The thing is, the way football is now as well, especially in the Premier League, you know, in the Championship you can talk about 20 goal scorers and there's probably, you know, a handful in the Championship that can, you know, score that number. But when you get up to the Premier League, 20 goal scorers, you're talking what, 2 or 3 a season? There's not a lot of people who go out and score like that sort of volume of goals. And if you're down the bottom end of the table, I think even having a striker who scores sort of 12, 13 is pretty good going for a bottom half side. And, you know, I think Andre Gray could do that. But the problem is with Gray, you need to, you know, play to his strengths. We saw it last season plenty of times. He quite likes the ball over the top. So Defoe, you know, you'd think he's got the skill set to do that, but the problem is we just never really get in the positions to feed him, and particularly when we play so narrow, I think that doesn't help either. So it's going to be interesting to see what we do with him. But if maybe in January we can sign a, you know, another wide player, because clearly Dash doesn't feel confident in playing Kiteley, I'd say in our side now that Goodmanson's out, he's probably the only player left who plays with any real width when he plays on the wing. I don't know why Arfield doesn't anymore, because previously in the past we have seen he can sort of stay towards the touchline, but now he's always sort of inside. And I think a big part of the key is we just need to get some width in the side, because at the moment I think we play too narrow for a lot of teams, and you know, we end up getting crowded out, and we don't have the skill to play in a crowded midfield. I think that's the biggest problem.
Even with Goodmanson though, we've seen Goodmanson play on the right quite a lot, and because he's left-footed, he wants to cut inside. So I think there's certainly different ideas they could do that. Talking about strikers, Simon, something we've seen in the papers over here could well just be paper talk, but we've been linked with Jordan Rhodes of Middlesbrough. He's not in the 18 again today. Obviously, his face doesn't fit. I think Karanka said he's available. Be a controversial one with his Rovers history, but he is a player that has scored goals. Do you think that would be an interesting one at all, or does he not offer enough all-round play?
He's a bit unproven at the Premier League level, isn't he?
Like, totally unproven at the Premier League. He's exactly like Gray. It wouldn't make any sense to me at all.
You know, that's the problem with it. But then again, you know, if they're willing to... I mean, I think they paid about 11 or 12 for him, didn't they, in the end? You know, it's going to be... They will be looking to get that back. But he's gone with Negredo, hasn't he? You know, he likes him more up front. And I just think, you know, he's not going to be playing there. I mean... Why not? I mean, I'm not against bringing in another striker, because, you know, it's not as though anything's really working that amazingly well up front. I mean, you can say that both Gray and Volks deserve their place in the team and Barnes can make a contribution, but we're not talking about players who are going to go in there and score goals consistently. And Rhodes has shown he can do that. He's obviously a confidence player who probably needs a move now if that's not working out for him. The Rovers thing, it's always an interesting one. I mean, you know, we used to have a policy of not really doing it, didn't we? But that's been broken a few times. I wouldn't have a problem with Jordan Rhodes. How long was he at Rovers for? A year and a half, 2 years at the most?
It'd be one of those things.
He's not exactly Simon Garner, is it?
Yeah, he scored a few goals for us that would soon be forgotten. But it might just be one of those things that people held against him at the start of his career. It wouldn't bother me.
Starts missing chances, then he becomes a reject, doesn't he? But, you know.
Natalie, what's your thoughts on Rhodes? Do you think we need more firepower? For me, it's further back, the problem. We're not creating chances for the strikers, so... Spending money on a pure goal scorer who needs chances to be created for him, he's not going to create chances for himself, Rhodes. Wouldn't really make any sense to me.
I would snap their hand off for him, personally. I agree with you, Jamie. I think you're right. I think there are deeper problems in that side, in that we need to deal with the supply line. But equally, I've talked before on the podcast about a ruthlessness in front of goal and a sharpness and a concern of this team in having to create 10 10, 12 chances just to score one. And part of that problem is that the goal scorers we've got on the pitch aren't ruthless enough in putting that ball in the back of the net. They need, you know, they don't take the chances when they get them. I know he's not proven at Premier League level, but Jordan Rose is a goal scorer. And if we can get him on that pitch, I think that he will convert more of the chances that we are creating than the players that we currently have in this squad. I think if we then do also get a winger and a supply line. I mean, Dufour, assuming we can get him to the point where he can play 90 minutes at some point, Dufour, like you said, yeah, big assumption. But like you said before, Dufour will supply goals to Gray at some point. We want to see them two playing together. Dufour will also, in that sense, supply goals for Rose. And I just think we need a better and a more clinical target man up front than the one that we've got. And at the moment, things aren't working very well for him. He's obviously made that move to Middlesbrough and it has not worked out. Cranker did not want him, has not played him. So his confidence must be rock bottom. Dyche is a fantastic manager in terms of getting the best out of his players from a mental point of view. He will sort that out and he will make him feel like he's wanted. The team will play well with him and he'll get the best out of him. I do not doubt that. So for me, I'm a big fan. I think he's worth a punt for sure. And where else are we going to get a goal scorer that's going to be as potentially cheap as he's going to be?
Well, the one who's been on our bench for most of the season.
Well, that's probably not helpful, Birdie. Obviously, Gray's got a mental problem though at the moment, so we can't. How long are we going to wait for Gray to sort this out?
Has he just not been given the ball? I mean, he had the only real great opportunity for us on Saturday, and you know, forced a great save from Lee Grant, I thought. And
that was the closest thing we created to a chance on Saturday.
Yeah, and he's a player. If you give him chances, he will score goals. Jordan Rhodes, I think, needs the type of chances that if we can't give Gray chances, where Gray can take half chances, some of the angles we've seen Gray score from previously, you know, are incredible. Jordan Rhodes needs tap-ins and he's around a 12-yard box player.
That's fine, but we can do that if we're going to play a 4-5-1. Play Ray Rhodes up front. Rhodes would be better in a 4-5-1 than Bowles.
Playing 4-5-1, we've not done that all season. We've not created those chances. So I don't believe that suddenly getting a player who's not going to come and work back and do the work our strikers do is going to change the
fact. I can only think of one goal, really. One of the first goal against Palace, the Volks one from close range. That's the only goal we've really scored that's been the sort of one that I can imagine Rhodes nabbing, like one of these nibbly ones around the 6-yard box. I'm with you, James, on this. I think he needs a certain type of service, Rhodes, and he thrives more on a team that creates a lot of chances rather than the odd one. So I don't think he'd be suitable for us because we're just not creating a lot of chances. For me, if I was investing, I would be investing in the supply line, as good a winger as I could afford, and probably a central midfielder, because it's just not working out for Jeff Hendrick at the moment. But I'm very interested to see what we do, because I've still got a question mark over Dyche's record in the transfer market, to be honest. There's been a few misses and a few hits, so I think this is a pivotal window. I'm sure we'll talk more about the transfer window as it gets nearer. Rhodes was obviously want to talk about it tonight because Borough playing as we're recording the podcast and Negredo's just missed a chance that Rhodes probably would have scored. So that's why we brought that one up. But we'll move on now to Tweet of the Week. So over to Natalie for a complete surprise. So I forgot to ask what it is. So no segue into Tweet of the Week this week. I'm just going to throw over to Natalie and see what it is.
Tweet of the Week. 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 Tweet of the Week.
Indeed. Now, we're back to our usual difficulty in picking Tweet of the Week this week. And there seems to be a direct correlation with the success of Tweet of the Week and to whether Burnley play home or away. So in that thing...
How weird!
I know, right?
What other correlation can you think of between our home and away results? That's so strange.
I know, honestly. Groundbreaking analysis on the podcast. So this week, along that theme, I picked up on a tweet on a Matt Lane who tweeted a little bit of support to our very downtrodden fantastic fans who have travelled around the country so far this year and seen our team get absolutely battered pretty much everywhere they go to, with the exception of Old Trafford. So we're going to give a shout out this week to our hardworking, loyal, fantastic away support. And Matt Lane tweets, fans doing us proud regardless of the results so far. So thank you for that, Matt. And for all of you who are listening, who have braved the motorways and the buses and the trains to get around the country to support the boys, knowing full well that we're probably going to get battered, then massive, massive, massive kudos to you.
Yeah, 2,500 of them at Stoke at the weekend. Fair enough. I want to go to Stoke at the best of times, but it's going to see your team lose a football match. Yeah, fair play to that. Moving on then to the weekend's game, Bournemouth, the visitors to Turf Moor. Stunning comeback for the Cherries on Sunday at home to Liverpool. 3-1 down with 15 minutes to go. They won 4-3. Yes, we beat Liverpool at home, but we didn't do it like that. And Simon, Eddie Howe's doing a fantastic job down there, albeit he's had a good budget.
Yeah, no, they were really buzzing, weren't they? Yes, that was incredible. Real, real spirit that they showed there as well, and they look lively and energetic, and it's going to be a difficult one, isn't it? It's weird, isn't it? The two teams, the only two teams have beaten Liverpool this season, and it's Burnley and Bournemouth. And but, you know, I think we're coming into a run of games now where it is getting to crunch time, isn't it? You know, I mean, I know there's a long way to go, yeah. But you look at the three home games,
Bournemouth, Middlesbrough, Sunderland, the next three, absolutely massive.
Yeah, and if we are going to break our bad run of form away from home as well, if there's one team in the Premier League that don't look comfortable at home, it's West Ham United. You know, in a new home, and they've got five shoved past them there. You know, we haven't had any performances like that at home, have we, like that? And so, you know, this has the potential, if we could just find that magic ingredient, get the formation right, get the selection right, get Andre Gray scoring again, get Defoe back in and playing again, then maybe, you know, if we can get something out, you know, a win out of this game, then suddenly you go to West Ham, you know, all right, forget about Spurs away, that's not going to happen. But then Middlesbrough and Sunderland at home, City away, that's not going to happen. But, you know, you could be looking at picking up, you know, 7-8 points from this little run around now in the festive season, and that could really help get us away from trouble. So it's a big one, really, because I think it sets the tone for this run of games now. If we mess up on Saturday, suddenly those games become like, you know, the fear factor starting to get in there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's three defeats in a row, and okay, we've not been terrible in all those, but yeah, you don't want that to go to four, and then you've got to go to West Ham, and that starts up like a massive game against a team around the bottom three. It's really starting to become crunch time. I think it's far too early in the season to talk about must-win games, but I think it's a bit of a must-not-lose against Bournemouth. Yeah. James, obviously, Eddie Howe coming back to Turf Moor. A lot of fans still unhappy with him for leaving the club. What sort of reaction do you think he's going to get? It'll be a bit mixed, won't it, at the weekend?
Yeah, it will be a bit mixed, but I'm not really sure why, to be honest. I felt like we weren't a bad team under him, but we weren't going anywhere fast either. You know, there's that old theory, isn't there, that you can't really do much away from the South Coast, and he's not really done anything to disprove it so far, has he? I mean, to be honest, it
hasn't been anywhere else, though. It's just one failure, apparently.
True, but I think it's hard to label a failure, though, maybe. It's just he was kind of average. We were kind of all right, weren't we? Just plodding along in the middle of the table.
Well, I can't remember the actual stat. It felt like that most of the time, but by the time he actually went, there was starting to be quite a few grumbles about him, weren't there? And I think we were like 16th or 17th, and we were only like 3 or 4 points off the relegation zone.
There were some awful games as well. Like, was it Palace you went to? Went 2-0.
His last game, yeah, it was Palace, and I was at that game, and I was surprised that there were fans saying he's got to go. They wanted him sacked. So I think
fans always do that away games, don't they?
I don't think it was just knee-jerk. I think it was more a reaction to how bad we were defensively at that time. We know when Dash came and he fixed the defence, it was the first thing he did.
And then I remember hearing some fans complaining about Dash at games later that season where we weren't conceding but we weren't scoring, and they wanted Dash out.
Never happy, these fans. I think Howe set a lot of the foundations that then Dyche built on, sort of similar to to Cottrell, although Cottrell should have gone earlier, that Cottrell set things in place and then Coyle added things to that. And I think without Howe bringing in players like me and Trippier and Austin and Ings, I don't think that promotion would have then happened.
I guess I always thought that the thing with Cottrell was, and I think Cottrell takes, you know, a massive chunk of the share for that first promotion, because he sort of basically set the whole team up, and Coyle mainly just deluded them into thinking they were a lot better than they were, which is obviously what Coyle was good at. Whereas when Dyche came in, I think he sort of had to completely change the mentality behind the players. And I also felt that maybe a lot of Howe signings were, you know, ones that me or you, not to be disrespectful to us here, Smith, could have probably picked out. You know, they were, I think, quite easy choices. And I think it was the same with Coyle. Like, people said when he signed Chris Eagles, it was a great signing. But, I mean, any of us could have picked Chris Eagles up. It was obvious he was going to be half decent.
Yeah, maybe. I play a lot of Football managers. So some of the players that, yeah, fair enough. But we did pick up a couple of bargains from the lower leagues as well. Austin, okay, he's got a lot of goals, but someone started to pay £1 million for him. Danny Ings, he was a kid. Danny Ings had played half a dozen games, scored a couple of goals.
No,
on me,
boy. Ings is obviously more of a point, I think. But obviously, Cottrell.
Junior Stanislas plucked him from West Ham's reserves, of course.
Obviously, Cottrell, you have stuff like Elliot, where we sort of pick players out of. Michael Duff being the, obviously the classic example.
Yeah, more obscure players. That
being,
that's true.
Like, you know, a bit very middle of the road players, and obviously they turned out to do a pretty good job for us over the years.
What are your thoughts on how Natalie?
They're quite clouded in that I hate him now. It's terrible. I get that really. Feeling of a personal attack after what he did, and this is completely irrational. I will caveat this now, it's completely irrational and a ridiculous fan thought to have, but I was absolutely outraged that he had the audacity to quit our club.
Like, I dare someone want to leave. Why would anyone want to leave?
Yeah, exactly. So because of that, I've really disliked him since then, and it's just all the things that I really liked about him when he was at the club. So I loved his smoothness and how nice he dressed, and like him and Tyndall and their relationship.
Suddenly
become
negative as soon as he's
somewhere
else.
Now he's smug and horrible, and I just hate him. So, I mean, you cannot argue with the success he's had at Bournemouth. What an incredible job he's done with that club. And I was very judgmental when they got promoted. I thought they'd be the absolute whipping boys of the division. And actually, Bournemouth were really unlucky last season that the Leicester story took off to the extent that it did. Because in any other season, the press and the story of them managing to survive and go up in and finish as high as they did, albeit, you know, they had quite a poor end to the season, but they survived comfortably in the end.
Yeah, it was partly Leicester hogging the limelight.
That really is one of the better ways I've heard Leicester's champion success played down as well.
Yeah, it is.
Leicester are rubbish now. But yeah, I think also they'd survived in like March, hadn't they? And they basically stopped trying after that.
Which is incredible. And Watford as well did the same thing. Two promoted sides finished really high up, and they just didn't get the credit they deserved because of that. Now, I'd be interested. I'd go shy of saying that Howe is a great manager, because at the moment he's only proved to be successful at one club. Now, look at David Moyes. He's really struggled as soon as he left Everton. He's not had very much success at all. And I do think that there is a one club fits all men. Do you know what I mean? It's like one club fits the manager type. So I don't know
whether that Moyes was good before he went to Everton as well, though.
Everton were the only.
Yeah, but he was
profile,
there a long
though.
Time and high profile, obviously. But no, but thanks for your contribution, James. but yeah, no,
we do forget that he was good at Preston, because Preston are an irrelevant football club that do not matter.
Oh, exactly. So I would be very interested to see how he manages, because I don't think he was that prolific for us, and I don't think it really worked for us. So I'd be interested to see what he's like if he moves away from Bournemouth. But as I said before, I'm pretty worried about Saturday, and it's going to really hurt when they absolutely batter us, because it's him and I'm irrationally hating.
Excellent. Well, I think we can all guess what Natalie's prediction is going to be. We'll start with you, Simon. It's going to be one of these where the away team dominates the ball at Turf Moor. Surely Bournemouth like to have the ball. Players like Jack Wilshere were very comfortable in possession, but Burnley can hurt teams on the break. We've seen that at Turf Moor this season. How do you think it's going to go? Give us a prediction.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's what it's going to be like. I think Bournemouth will play their pretty Eddie Howe football, knock it around. All very nice. And we'll smack them in the mouth two or three times. I think Andre Gray. I think Andre Gray.
Andre Gray hat-trick. You're not like, comes, that's James's bet. You can't steal his bet.
No, I'm not going with hat-trick, but he comes to life and scores the first two in our 3-0 victory.
Excellent. James, before your prediction, we've got a competition that you're going to fill us in about. Giveaway competition? Giveaway.
Yeah, we have. So, working with our friends Art of Football, you may have seen us tweet about on Black Friday. We're going to do a very simple, classic retweet and follow competition where you can get the opportunity to win one of the designs on either a print or on a T-shirt. So it's going to be well worth entering. A little Christmas competition that I'm sure any football fan who's, well, Burnley fan in particular, would like to have one of these.
So that's retweeting our tweet about it, right?
Yeah, and yeah, following. So that's going to be on our
You have
Twitter
to follow
account,
Art of Football as well and us, otherwise you're not eligible.
Exactly.
And you know when's the closing date? We've got a closing date?
So that competition's going to close on the 16th of December, so you can let, if you're going to give it to someone you know or whatever as a Christmas present, you can let them know it's going to be on the way.
Yeah, and we'll stick details about that in the show notes. As well, so don't miss out. James, your prediction then for Burnley Bournemouth at the Turf on Saturday?
Well, in complete contrast to everyone else talking about Saturday's game, I still really fancy us at home. I think, you know, the games where we haven't won at home, we've been a little bit unlucky. You know, we've shown a much better version of ourselves in front of our home crowd. I'm not going to go for any bold hat-trick predictions, but I do fancy us to win pretty comfortably. And I'm going to say it's going to be 2-0. And I think Andre Gray will get at least one of them. He's going to come back to life. He's going to prove Bromers wrong, that he's in the right place. And he's going to bang one home, run over to Bromers and like celebrate.
I'll take that, to be fair.
Well, hopefully Gray's in the team since we're all predicting him to score goals. Natalie, round us off then.
I've got a really bad feeling, but I don't know whether to go with it or not. Oh, I really, I don't know what to do. Everything, all of my strategy and all my tactics are letting
me
down this season.
What you could do is just put strategy and tactics in the bin and give us a score prediction. That's what you could do.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't even know who you are at times, James. I'm the host of a very serious
football podcast that gets derailed in the last 5 minutes every week.
Every week. I'm going to... The positive, the change of turnstile and the positive attitude has worked at home. We've got an away problem, but that's a different issue.
Don't say what turnstile you use, please.
So I'm changing to turnstile 28, which is... Is that the right turnstile? 27. I'm changing to turnstile 27, which is a new turnstile.
Just keeping you all guessing so you can't abduct
them. Yeah, please don't do that. Not before Christmas anyway. At least let me open my presents first. I'm going to use a new turnstile and I'm going to predict a 4-0 win for Burnley with a Gray hat-trick and... Matt Loughton scoring from a
Lawton.
Corner.
Matt Loughton scoring.
Loughton, sorry, Matt Loughton.
Glad you thought about your plans for this thing rather than just.
Is he scoring straight from the corner? Or is he
direct from the corner?
Scoring as a result of a corner.
No, it's just going to bounce off the back of his head and go back at net as he's looking up at it. It'll be a scrappy goal, but it's going to cause him to be well happy.
He hangs back for the corner, Bromley, so he's even
he's
got
not
to
not this time.
We've got to rifle it in. It could be like he scored a goal a few years ago, didn't he, for Villa? Rifled one in some distance.
But we're going to be 3-0 up by then, so we won't need to hold back for the corner. He's just going to go for it, and it's going to kick-start his season. He's going to be well good from now on.
Have you ever watched Sean Dash's Burnley play? When have we ever gone gung-ho when we 3-0 up?
I'm not saying it's...
On Saturday, that's what's going to happen. On Saturday. We'll leave it there then. Lots of positive predictions, so hopefully an improved performance back at Turf Moor. Well, results and performances have been good this season in sharp contrast to the away form that thankfully we won't have to talk about on next week's podcast. That's it for this week. As James said, we've got giveaway going on with Art of Football. Check the show notes for the podcast for all the details about that. Thanks to Rick, who provides our artwork for the podcast. You can find that on social media and on the website, nonameever.net as well. Email us if you've got any questions, feedback about the podcast. As always, email address is podcast@nonameever.net, and you can also tweet us at nonameever.net as well. Last thanks to Kev, who's going to edit the podcast this week. He's not with us, but we'll have to edit this podcast, so he's with us in spirit. And thanks to everyone for listening, as always. But that's it from this week's podcast. Thanks to James, Natalie and Simon for joining me. I've been Jamie Smith. Goodbye.
And that you do actually have to get a... I'm sorry. That was my... okay, I'm going to have to start that again.
What is going on?
That was
Santa. Santa, yeah.
It was my reindeer that I wear in fancy dress on Friday, which just fell on the back of me when I was talking. So I'm going to start that little section again.
Tweet
of the week. One sec.
I thought she was
going to
say she hadn't figured out what it was yet.
No, I haven't.
I thought so.
I'm so sorry. I just
careful. Don't choke. Don't use the dad. That won't be a tweet of the week. That's for sure.
Death corner.